This is episode 13, how much to charge for your hand lettering. Welcome to the Hand Lettering Podcast. I'm Tam Lowe, hand lettering artist with a degree in art and design and more than 10 years experience specialising in pencil illustrations. I write and create for letteringtutorial.com, a place to find tutorials, interviews, resources and more. Join me as I talk about all things lettering. Hello and welcome to the Hand Lettering Podcast. Firstly, I wanted to kick this episode off by apologising that the episodes recently haven't been sticking to that schedule that I set out a few weeks back now of weekly and usually every Tuesday. That's when they're supposed to be out and it hasn't happened recently. Now, there's a number of reasons for it. Firstly, I've had a ridiculous amount of family events to attend, and when I started Lettering Tutorial last year, I started it kind of mid-ish April really, so I skipped most of the chaos and I was only doing one thing around a week or maybe every 2 weeks, I can't remember now, so it was obviously a lot lighter workload. Now a year on, I'm obviously trying to, you know, provide you more content and things like that, and so I've had a sort of a backlog of that to try and catch up on and keep on top of. And then I've been poorly as well for a brief period. I had a horrible migraine thing for a good few days actually, which obviously is not an pleasant environment when you then need to put some headphones over your head and hear your voice booming through your ears. So I couldn't really record then. And unfortunately, now on top of all of those things, I've got some new neighbours downstairs, and I mentioned in previous episodes a few times actually how the apartment downstairs was being renovated and the noise from that on and off was being quite disruptive to obviously getting episodes recorded and up regularly as I wanted to. I think it's a family now that have moved in downstairs. There's definitely children anyway, and they probably make the usual amount of noise that children do, but I think they're quite young. There's a lot of crying and screaming and, you know, the sort of tantrums that children tend to throw. And it's again made things so disruptive to try and record. And I think it's unlikely, you know, they're probably going to be going anywhere again anytime soon. So I don't think that situation is really going to resolve as quickly as perhaps as some of the renovation stuff has. I also know as well that there's a building, quite a big building close by to me, that's been stood empty for a while, that's looking to be filled by a new business, and I'd imagine there's going to be a lot of work going on with that when they start to move in. So I get the feeling that there's going to be continual noise interruption now, which makes recording incredibly difficult from sort of here going forwards really. So I've been thinking on what to do with that situation. I don't want to stop making the podcast or end it or anything like that, because you all seem to really enjoy it. You keep listening and I really enjoy making it. But obviously it is becoming really difficult to record now and get enough quiet time to do it. And the only way really is at the moment is to have to, you know, record a bit, stop, record a bit more. And that's not good for the flow of the episode. It's not good listening for you because it kind of, I've got to edit it and it's a bit choppy. So I think going forward, what would be a good idea is to create the podcast in seasons. So for example, the current episodes, this one, maybe one or two others, will probably fall into season one. And then I'll take a break, but I won't actually be taking a break. In that time, I will be trying to take advantage of quiet patches and record episodes. And then, you know, at a point in the future, then I'll be able to release, say, season two of the podcast series. And you'll be able to get those episodes then weekly. They'll be on a weekly schedule still. There'll just be gaps in between. I mean, my plan obviously originally was to do a weekly episode, just, you know, every week indefinitely. However, because of everything that's going on, I think that's going to be incredibly challenging to do now. So I think the podcast season seems like the best way forward. That way, I can put more time and quality into the episodes as well if I'm not making as many. It means I can potentially sit down and record episodes quite late at night when I know it generally is normally quiet. I can't obviously do that every week because that's going to start to impact my health if I'm staying up to the really early hours to get things recorded on a regular basis. But that's not going to, hurt if I do that once every, few weeks or so. So let me know what you think on that idea. Like I say, there'll be another episode either next week or the week after, whenever I can get enough quiet to try and get the whole episode recorded. But I think working ahead like that is probably the best way to go. And I also, another thing to point out with it as well, I want to be able to start actually interviewing people on the podcast. So rather than just featuring a lettering artist and talking about their work, I thought it would be really great if I can start to get people to actually, join me on the podcast and talk about their work. Because I think at the end of the day, you're going to get so much more value from that. And you're going to learn more about that person than obviously I can, relay just from researching them. And a lot of these people are in different time zones to me. I'm, if you hadn't guessed from the accent, from the UK. And that's obviously not so bad for other people in the UK. However, a lot of lettering artists tend to be US based, and there's quite a few in Australia as well. And trying to obviously set up times where I can record them, I'm going to have to sort of fit in with their time zones and things to make things easier for them. So again, that's going to be difficult to try and organise on a weekly basis or fit that, in every few weeks around the rest of the podcast schedule and, the content schedule for lettering tutorial. So that's another reason why I think it's a really probably a good move to go with creating the podcast series in seasons. That way, then I can plan out those interviews, get those recorded. If anybody then is, suddenly not able to, join me for the interview, it's, all going to be planned ahead. So there's not going to be a gap then, because I will try my hardest to find somebody else instead. So the schedule then, when the season two launches, will just be able to follow, episode 1, 2, 3, and so on. And there shouldn't be any gaps or anything like that with it either. Let me know what you think about this idea. If you can think of an alternative, if you got a really great solution, like how to build your own soundproof studio from home, which is not really viable, because I've got a pretty kind of open plan apartment, so I think I'd have to try and soundproof the whole lot, which would be very difficult and not very practical. But yeah, if you've got any other ideas of, a way that you think I could perhaps get round the current kind of noise and lack of quiet, that would be good. But otherwise, if you really like the idea of the podcast being in seasons, so you get, regular content, just slightly less of it, I guess, is the only downside. It would be great to hear from you. I obviously want this podcast to, be what's best for you. Now, as there most likely will be a gap in when, you'll see the sort of, obviously excluding the next couple of episodes after that, there's probably going to be a bit of a gap before you see the next or are available to listen to the next set of episodes. So what I recommend doing right now is subscribing on iTunes or Stitcher, SoundCloud, YouTube, wherever you listen. Subscribe, follow, like, whatever the different ones are for different sites, because that's really important. Because obviously, if there's going to be a gap, you want to know when that next episode's going to be out, and that's the best way to do it. Because that way, then you'll get notified, or it'll download automatically, and it'll be there ready for you. The other thing you can do as well is join my weekly newsletter. You can find that at letteringtutorial.com/newsletter. Or if you just visit letteringtutorial.com, if you look down the sidebar, or if you're on mobile, it'll be right at the bottom. There's a a quick newsletter sign up form in the sidebar. But yeah, join the newsletter because I bring pretty regularly weekly updates that will give you an idea of, you know, what's been going on lettering tutorial that week. So obviously as soon as then season two is up and running, you'll be notified in that newsletter. So there's no way then that you'll miss future episodes of the podcast. Okay, so that's updates done with. And I'm going to move on now to the content of this episode. How much to charge for your hand lettering? So this episode is inspired by one of the Hand Lettering HQ Facebook group that I manage. One of the members of that group raised this question on behalf of a few other members in the group too, and it's something that they've been discussing in the group. And normally I do questions and answers at the end of every other episode, but this one, I think there's so much to talk about on it. It seemed to make sense to do a whole episode on it. So here it is. So the question that was raised directly was by Renata, and she said, how much do you charge for a lettering piece, especially if it's for a friend? And that a lot of the group have been asking this question, as none of them really know what a good amount should be. So this is a pretty big talking point, and there's a lot, you know, there's a lot that people will say. Different people will give as well completely different responses, but I suppose all I can really do is perhaps share some of my experiences and some of the things that I've read on online, and then hopefully that will help, you know, inform how you do go about charging for your work. I'll start with my experiences. So before I began lettering, I launched a pencil portrait business, which is still kind of quietly running. I do the odd commission here and there for family and friends mostly, but I don't tend to advertise it as much as I did because it didn't take me too long to work out that the time that I was putting in to creating the portraits just wasn't worth the amount that I was charging. And most people I found just weren't willing to pay more. And I think that's my own fault because of how I originally set my prices. So this is my experience, learn from it. So I began by just drawing a couple of pet portraits of one of my best friend's dogs. I just, you know, sat one afternoon and thought, it's been a while since I've done some drawing. You know, I like her dogs. There's many, many pictures of them on Facebook because she loves her dogs too. So Facebook was just bombarded with photos. So I was like, it's, you know, really easy to get some reference sort of views to draw, you know. And I thought, I'll just see how they turn out. And finished one, I thought, you know, I don't think that looks terrible. So I sent a picture to my friend and I was just like, guess what this is? So I thought that's the best way to do it. So if she can't tell it's her own dog, then I think I need to kind of practice a lot more. But no, she came back straight away. She said, oh my god, that's, you know, that's my dog. And then I moved on to drawing, she's got two, so I moved on to drawing the second one then. And that one actually came out a bit better again, but then out of her two dogs, the second one was my favourite dog. So maybe I'm slightly biased there, I don't know. But that came out quite well, and I think I put photos of them then up on Facebook. And then a couple of people, you know, were like, wow, you know, that's amazing, you should start, you know, doing this, you know, as a business. So, you know, I thought about it and I was like, yeah, that, you know, that could be good. I really enjoy drawing portraits. It's, you know, aside from lettering, it's one of my favourite things to draw. And then I think it kind of stemmed from that. I'm just trying to think what came next. Oh, I did a couple more, just, you know, nobody asked me to do them. I did them as presents for people at Christmas and got some really positive feedback. And then my dad was like, can you please draw, you know, our family dog And he's actually been asking me to do that for about 8 years, or was asking me to do it for about 8 years. So I finally thought, well, I've done a couple of these portraits now, and they haven't come out too bad. So I thought I'd, give it a go finally. And it's probably the best one I've actually drawn, to this date. But I think maybe it's because I knew, my family dog too. So I think I knew the dog really, really well, and that made him a bit easier to draw. I put that up as well, and then lo and behold, I started getting requests in from friends saying, how much will you charge to draw my cats or whatever, and it kind of started to grow from that. Now I think because I'd started off obviously drawing these just kind of for fun as a bit of a hobby really and experimentation, the first amount I charged for the first one was £10, which in dollars probably translates to maybe about $17 ish. So not a great deal, and considering the amount of time as well that it took, it probably took a good sort of five hours, I reckon. And this was for a small one, so A5 paper size and just like charcoal and pencil and chalk. So not particularly expensive materials to use, I guess, but still quite a lot of time. And clearly, I was, undercharging for the amount of time that was involved and the overall quality, because I didn't sacrifice on the quality in any way. They were immensely pleased with it afterwards. But it was for a close friend of mine, and I kind of felt bad charging any more than that, really. And then I got approached by a friend of my friend's who was like, oh, can you char can you draw my dog and cats? And she wanted two different sets of portraits. And again, because obviously I figured she might know how much I asked my other friend for. So I put it up a little bit because obviously I wasn't as sort of close to her, I guess. But I again didn't want to, charge too much in case, she said no, because really I was excited that people were, interested in buying my work. And so I kind of let, the excitement kind of overweigh, what I really should have been focusing on, which is, the value that people are getting from the work. So I charged that, and then I had more people asking me how much, would it be for a portrait? And I had a couple more that, were more than happy. And slowly I kind of started creeping, the price up. And then people started asking if I could do colour ones as well. The one I did for my parents was a kind of a colour one, but the dog's black and white, so there wasn't loads of colour in it really, just around the eyes. But people started asking for colour and if I could do them a bit bigger as well, so that they could fit, more pets in. Because the A5 you could fit sort of two very small portraits in, but really I needed to go up. And obviously going up in size meant more time again, because it was obviously bigger. But it also meant, again, with people wanting colour, more materials, higher quality materials, because I didn't want to use, naff pencil crayons, the real cheapy ones you can get. I wanted to use a good quality pencil crayon to obviously do the work justice. So at this point, I put the prices up, a little bit more again when people were asking, and it kind of reached this sort of almost cut-off point where people just, wouldn't pay beyond a certain point. And I think it's probably because I had kind of advertised at one point on Facebook, I'll do a black and white portrait for this amount, and a colour for this amount, before I really gauged actually that the colour ones would take more time and use more materials. And then obviously I put the prices up a bit more once I realised what was, actually involved with it. And I think, what happened was people obviously saw that I'd been previously charging a lower price, and then they wouldn't, they were like, hang on, well, if she was charging like, sort of 20, £30 originally for a colour portrait, and now, she's charging 50. I don't want to really pay that. So I had, a few friends message me like, oh, how much, would it cost for you to draw, my cat or my rabbit, whatever. So I'd come back and say, I think I was sort of saying about £50, which, considering they would take about 12 hours, that's still, not enough for the time and value that went in. But I was still, trying to be nice. These are my friends. I didn't want to sort of look like I was, trying to take advantage or anything like that. And then, some of them just went quiet, and I sort of, I felt a little bit upset, actually. I'll be honest about that. I was like, that isn't actually that much, really. What are they sort of expecting? Are they expecting less than that, or were they hoping that I just say, oh, it's fine, I'll do it for free? So I think when you set prices, I think the best thing you can probably do is set what you're going to charge as early on as you can, because, as you can probably learn from me, if you start off charging for your lettering, say you start off charging like, I don't know, maybe about $20 an hour or something like that, and then you suddenly, jump up to, $50 an hour. In your chart, advertising this to sort of friends and family, etc., they're, most likely going to do what my group of friends did, question kind of why the prices have just jumped up and why they can't really, get it at a cheaper price. But friend, well, I still do have a friend that does kind of logo design more than anything, and graphics, and he did a similar thing, I think, to me. He started off, really low pricing, and he's, worked his way up and worked his way up and worked his way up, and he's found a lot of people in his friendship group will just be, really awkward about paying beyond a sort of a certain point. And I think they either expect it for, nothing, or a lot cheaper than other people will. I think the people that really value your work will be the ones that are willing to pay more. I had one of my friends again who wanted a portrait of his dog, and he asked how much it would be. It was just one dog. He wanted A4. It didn't involve like masses and masses of colours. So and I was still trying to be nice. So I said, okay, £30, which, again, the portrait took about 12 hours, I think, in the end, so nowhere near enough to justify it. But I was still sort of trying to build up a bit of a portfolio as well. He was so amazed by the work, he ended up paying me £50 instead. So he paid almost double what I quoted him for it. Didn't ask him for it. I didn't drop any hints whatsoever. He just couldn't believe that, the work that I'd created. He, voluntarily gave me more money. So the people that really appreciate your work will be happy to pay, whatever you charge them at. For those of you that aren't familiar with Sean McCabe, from seanwes.com, he's written some really helpful articles on pricing. And I will try to link to those if I can re-find them in the show notes for this episode. And you can find the show notes at letteringtutorial.com/handletteringpodcast13, and that's the numerical number 13. Or if you just go to letteringtutorial.com and click on podcasts in the menu, you can choose the relevant episode from the list there. But yeah, as I was saying, he's written some really great articles on pricing, and he's basically said there should only be three, or whatever you set your prices off really to begin with. And I think that works very well in the situation with friends, because you can either just set your prices, if they're not willing to pay it, then they don't value your work, I guess, as much as perhaps you'd hope they do. Or you can not charge them anything. But when you don't charge anything, although it can seem like you're perhaps not getting anything out of it, you can still say that normally it would cost this much. But on this occasion, I'm happy to do this for free for you. They're still going to go to friends and things and say, it should have been this much. I got it for free. And people, I think, don't expect to get things for free, as much as they expect to get things discounted, especially with friends and family. Giving something for free is, a hugely generous thing, and people are, probably more likely to come back to you a second time round if you give it to them for free and actually pay the full price a second time round, rather than you give them, something at a discounted price. They're going to expect that price again the next time round. So that's kind of the way Sean Wes recommends to do things, and you'll notice if you look at his courses and stuff. He'll either have a free option or there'll be a set price. Sometimes when he launches a course, he starts it at a set price for a brief amount of time, and then he'll put it up to a final set price, and that's literally it. It doesn't move. That's, I think, that shows consistency with your pricing, because obviously mine, I moved, well, they went from sort of down to up. Then people weren't paying sort of the up price, so I moved them down a bit again, and kind of up a bit again, and that that doesn't look particularly professional. It doesn't give people really a clear idea of what you actually charge. So I think it's best to just start off with free, and then a realistic price worked out on the amount of time you put in and the value that people are going to get from your work. Now, at this point, you might be thinking, well, if I charge, not this really low kind of mates rates pricing, how am I going to build a portfolio up to then perhaps attract the people, that might pay higher, for my work? You might not build a portfolio as quickly by charging realistic prices for your lettering work. But there's nothing stopping you from working on your own personal projects in that time and filling a portfolio up with that instead. Work on the things that you're passionate about, the lettering words or phrases or new styles that you've always wanted to play about with, and have fun and create a portfolio like that. There's a lot of people out there that have got portfolios packed full of work they've done for their own personal use, not based on work that they've done for other clients. And the same applies, like if you take the coding world, for example, there'll be perhaps 50% of jobs that will want people that have had a couple of years experience working hands-on with specific language environments in an existing company. But more often than not, they'll look and they'll see if you're capable of doing what they want. And if you can, they'll employ you. So, you've got a great portfolio of projects that you've worked on, that just show you've got the skills. That's all that matters at the end of the day. It doesn't matter that they were, for your project, not somebody else's. So keep that in mind that, if you don't get as many people interested in your work right away at the prices that you set, just work on your own thing, build up your own portfolio, and then the people that really do value your work, that won't matter to them that it's not for a load of, companies or your friend's wedding or whatever. They'll just see your lettering and think, wow, that's good. That's a style I really like. That's a style I want, my project to be in. Now, when it comes to the amount that you should charge, so a realistic price for your lettering work and skills, there's nothing I can really say in terms of this is exactly how much you should charge. There isn't a set amount that I can just reel off to you right now because there's so many variants involved. So depending on which country you come from, obviously prices can vary dramatically from one country to another in terms of what services cost. I mean, even if you take the UK, for example, I'm sure most of you are probably aware, the UK is generally made up of England, Scotland, Wales, and then you've got Ireland hanging about over on the left-hand side somewhere. And Wales, the prices in Wales are dramatically cheaper than what they are in England. So, for example, a haircut in well, in this area of England that I'm in, it's around kind of anywhere really between about 14 to £20 for a women's or a lady's haircut. Whereas if you hop on, over the bridge to Wales, it's not separated, by the way, it's just a bridge to get there from this area. You would pay around £7 for a haircut, so that's probably about $12 maybe, and then the 14 to £20, that would be sort of, I guess, 25 to almost $30 roughly. So you can see there's quite a significant difference in price there, just within a relatively smallish country when you compare it to the US. And I know this obviously occurs in the US as well. There's different prices, I think, depending on like East Coast and West Coast and so on. So it's difficult to set, an exact price that would apply to all of you listening. The best thing to do is actually research what other people around you that are doing a similar sort of thing are charging. Now, maybe you can't find another lettering artist that's, that's sort of active in your area, but maybe there's somebody doing logo design work which has similar qualities and skills involved to what lettering does, and investigate, what they're charging. But again, that's not something to go by. You'd need to really collate a few of these to get, a rough idea. And there's other things to factor in too, like how long these people, have been perhaps doing logo design. It tends to be the people that have been doing sort of work in a specialist area for more than 10 years do have much higher rates. So there's things like that to gauge in too. And then again, skills, are they just limited to this one set of skills, or do they incorporate more skills in? So there's so many aspects to take in. The main thing you want to be doing when you set your prices is covering enough, obviously, to value the time that you put in. So it's really important to get a feel for how much time that you'll be spending, obviously, working on a piece, because you want to make sure, that your time's been compensated. But not only that, the value as well that the person will get from whatever it is that you're lettering. Is it just a one-time lettering piece, something, that they want to put up on their wall? Is it a logo? A logo is, the person that you letter the logo for is going to get huge value from that, because they're probably going to use it on their website, they might be using it on business cards, it might be turned into like a kind of a banner or header for the entranceway of a shop, or there's loads you can sort of do with a logo. So the value that they're going to get from that will be huge. So you obviously want to incorporate that into your pricing. Is it some wedding invitations? That's something obviously that A will use up a lot of time if you've got a hand letter each one individually, and it's perhaps 300 or more invites. And again, that's something that they're going to get a lot of value from, because you're creating so many of them. You're giving them this big set of unique, personalized, hand lettered, invites to hand out. And again, that's something, that these can sort of keep for, forever, really. So there's so many factors to involve when pricing your work. You obviously want to price it fairly as well. So, you know, you don't want to sort of, you know, someone says, I want 100 wedding invitations hand lettered. You don't turn around and go, okay, that'd be £50 million, please. You know, obviously keep things fair when you price them. The main thing to do is just get across to, you know, the friend or client, whoever it is that's interested in your work, what the value is that, you know, they're going to get from your work or you're going to give them from them using you. And then that will justify, you know, what you're charging. That's, I will point out again, something that I've read from Sean McCabe, SeanWes.com. So if I can find, I can't remember if it was all part of the same article or not, but again, if I can find that, I'll pop it in the show notes if it is a separate article. But it's important to keep those things in mind. And again, I mean, take my friend, the one that paid extra. He obviously saw so much value in my work. He was happy to pay, you know, more than what I'd originally quoted him for. So it's true. people will, you know, see the value in your work. You've got to have confidence in your work too. You know, confidence that you are giving value, that your work has value. So if you don't perhaps feel that at the moment, think about what you need to do to make that happen. Maybe it's practice a little bit more, or maybe it's just looking at your work a bit more realistically. Perhaps you're just looking at your work too critically. Actually, your work's really good and you're just not seeing that at the moment. So those might be some things to kind of keep in consideration. If you still find yourself unsure about how much to charge your lettering work, there's a really helpful book which you can get from Amazon and I suspect most other bookshops, and it's called The Graphic Artists Guild Handbook of Pricing and Ethical Guidelines, and the latest one is the 14th edition. There are some older ones. It's not the cheapest book in the world, but it is obviously full of really helpful information. It's got loads of stuff in there as well about licensing and things, which is important, and contract agreements, which when you're a lettering artist, you do need to use really to help make sure you do get paid when you're supposed to be. Yeah, there are slightly older versions if you can't quite afford the price tag on it, but just keep in mind that obviously the information in the older ones might not be so current or up to date, because obviously inflation happens pretty much every year now. I think prices seem to creep up for pretty much everything, and the same obviously applies within the art and design world. So it might be a case of if you do pick an older one, the prices perhaps won't be representative of nowadays, but it still might give you a starting point in terms of what you should be pricing your work at. I'll pop a link to that book in the show notes again, so you can find it really easily. To summarise what I've discussed in this episode, as there was quite a lot of information and content in this one, don't undersell yourself. That's one of the first things, and be consistent with your prices. So you will find people that will see the quality in your work, providing obviously you keep showing your work, you keep sharing it on social media. You will find people that, you know, will appreciate the value in your work. Don't be inconsistent with your pricing by, you know, starting off low, then going perhaps high and then changing it because, you know, people don't seem interested in going high. That was my mistake I made, which I shared in my experience of drawing portraits or pets. So avoid doing that if you can. Just start off with, as Sean McCabe recommends, free and a realistic set price, because then that gives you the option, you know, for those friends that are really near and dear to you that are like, you know, hey, I want this, you know, this lettering piece done, how much will it be? You can either be like, well, you know, it's this amount, But, as I love you, as you put up with me, I'll do it for free on this occasion. People are going to value that an awful lot more than if you just discount it. I think a lot of the things that I've got a discounted amount, I've noticed it, in my own behaviour. I don't appreciate as much as the things I either pay full price for or that people have said, have this for free. You value those things so much more. They mean more to you than when you get something just a bit cheaper. You respect it more, I think. So those are things to, keep in mind in terms of price and the whole how to approach pricing with your friends. And then in terms of how much to charge, just keep in consideration your location. What similar rates are around that area, how do they look? Because they will vary across the whole country. And if you're still not sure, do some research. Perhaps get the Artist Guild book, have a read of that, because that will hopefully give you a bit more insight into what you should be charging. And finally, just really look into your work and look deep. Make some notes on it if you need to, so you've got them, to hand, about what value people get from your work. You're not just fulfilling a requirement with your lettering work. You're, bringing a unique skill set. You're bringing something that perhaps other lettering artists can or don't have, or not many would el you know out else out there be able to bring. So keep those things in mind when you set your pricing. Awesome. Well, I think that wraps this episode up. Hopefully you've learned something from my pricing mistakes. I had nothing to model what I did previously with the portraits on. This time around with lettering, I obviously am much more prepared. I've done research into what people sort of in a similar catchment area to me charge. I've looked into what sort of unique skills I have and value I can offer, and those are the things I recommend that you do too. Now, as I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, if you want to leave any feedback in terms of the season structure that I think I'm gonna go with going forward, you can do that in a number of ways. And if you want to leave obviously any feedback just relating to this episode, you can do that in a few ways too. Firstly, if you go to the show notes for this episode, so again you can find those at letteringtutorial.com/handletteringpodcast13, and that's the numerical number 13. And if you scroll to the bottom, there'll be a comment section there. So feel free to share your comments and thoughts on this episode or on the making seasons of the podcast instead. Otherwise, you can send me an email, and you can do that using ask@letteringtutorial.com. That's ask@letteringtutorial.com. And then you can also reach out to me and get in contact with me through social media. So you can either go to the Lettering Tutorial Facebook page, which is found at facebook.com/letteringtutorial. Otherwise, Twitter, it's @letteringtut. And Instagram, you can find me @letteringtutorial. So please do get in touch, leave your comments and thoughts on this episode. There's still probably loads more to discuss. I'm sure some of you might have different experiences than me. Maybe you, use different pricing models that have actually worked really well. It's different for every person, I think, and it's different obviously for different locations and from, wherever you are in the world, things can work slightly differently. So it's kind of hard to generalize everything down into a way that everybody can, apply the same thing and it work perfectly. perfectly all of the time, but I'm hoping what I've given you in this episode can be applied to, you know, most of the world at the very least. Right, awesome. I think that's probably the end of this episode now. If you want to leave a rating for the podcast episode and an honest review, you can do that in iTunes and Stitcher. Any review you want to leave would be really appreciated because it helps me shape future episodes of the podcast, and it also helps other people to find it. Thank you so much for listening, and I will do my best to get the next episode up within the next week or two. I will try and find quiet children crying free and building work noise free times to make the next episode's recordings. Thank you. Bye for now.